Morning, I'd like to look at what the Bible, actually a very brief look at what the Bible has to say about comparisons. As we think about comparisons in the Bible, how do we determine what's valuable in our life? And a lot of times when we start off, it depends on our individual values. Some of us may say, well, I like football better than baseball. I like the Reds better than the Bengals. I prefer iced tea over coffee. And so sometimes it's a relative thing that we're talking about here. But some things, and as we look at the Bible speaks of things that have inherent value, and some things are inherently valuable. And the inherent value of an item really depends on the standard that you're using. All of us have been to school, and we all know that an A better than a B. It's inherently better than a B. And again, as Bible believers, we believe the Word of God has things that it includes that are inherently better than others. One of the things that we want to talk about today is the idea of deception. And as we value things, it's easy to be deceived. Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20 talks about those that put evil for good and good for evil. They are confusing the two. And as we look at our society today, clearly that's something that happens. Some other illustrations on deception. And these are true stories. They're documented. You can look them up. Actually, one of them is a case in a business school. There was a mid-tier clothing company once re-released a basic white T-shirt. Same fabric, same cut, same quality, but added a small label to it, a little designer logo label. So the original shirt sold for $12. The shirt with the logo sold for $85. Again, nothing has changed except the label, and that label gave it the value. Here's another story that was reported by CNN, the New York Times, and many others. In 2023, TikTok creators began exposing how many must-have products were actually cheap, low-quality items inflated by hype. Some creators showed that $200 skincare products cost $4 to manufacture. Luxury candles made at the same plant that standard candles were made in were extremely much more expensive. And influencers paid thousands of dollars to promote items that they never used. And what happened was people switched the price tags. Because of the perception, the price tag got switched. And so the value was not appreciated. One more final illustration along these lines, and this is a story out of Facebook, and it's actually Facebook's own research team. They once tested how people responded to posts that had artificially boosted likes, and they found that people believed that posts with more likes were truer than posts that didn't have as many likes. And users shared posts with high engagements, even if they were false. So the value was in how many people liked the post, not in the truth or the non-truth of the post, but it was simply the fact that a lot of people liked it. And so again, the idea of value here has been changed. People ignored the accurate posts that didn't have a lot of engagements. It was the social value that made the differences. Let's look at some moral comparisons in the Bible. And as I did a study on this, I found that there's an incredible number, and we're just going to talk about a few of them this morning. But there is an incredible number of comparisons in the Bible. If you want to do a search on that, you can simply look up the word better. Not all of them are in that just the better category, but just look up the word better and see what you find. But here's a couple of things. This idea of Proverbs chapter 15, and this is a lot, this idea of relative value is widespread in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 15, verses 16 and 17, little possessed with reverence for God surpasses great wealth accompanied by trouble. And as we sit back in our armchairs and they say, well, yeah, that's true. I can understand that. But then as we face situations where we have to make choices that maybe we pass over a promotion that might cause us to compromise on our spirituality, do we make that decision? Do we appreciate the value in the moment of crisis? Self-control surpasses physical strength, and mastering one's emotions exceeds conquering the city. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 32. For the Christian, self-control is something that is a given. Paul talks about disciplining himself, lest he preached to others and himself become a castaway. The idea that we need to control ourselves, or actually better stated, is that we need to allow God to control us. But as we look at this, we think about, here's a man who has the power to conquer a city, or actually, if you take the case of Alexander the Great, conquer the world. But Alexander the Great really didn't have a good control over his temper. There was at least one occasion where he took his best friend and tried to stab him with a spear. He escaped, very much like David did with Saul. But he didn't rule himself. And Robert E. Lee made the comment that if a man can't rule himself, how can he be expected to rule others? The idea of self-control is something that we need to focus on. And we do that by discipline, and that's a whole nother lesson. But the idea of the spiritual disciplines, we need to have those things in our life. The idea of prayer, we talked a lot about prayer recently. The idea of Bible study, the idea of attending services, the idea of committing to being here, the idea of thinking about Christ on a daily basis. It's discipline, and if we're going to make heaven, we have to be a disciplined people. Integrity and poverty transcends dishonesty, or wealth gained from corruption. And again, this is something that is very similar to number one, the idea that if we have just a little bit in our poverty, it's worth a whole lot more than if you get our money through false means. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. And this is one that I think in today's society has been largely trampled. The idea, Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 1, a good reputation and favor exceeds great riches, silver or gold. How much is your name worth? In other words, it's something that was handed down to you from your parents. And then what do you do with that name? Really, very much of what we have is our name. And we can sell that pretty easily by not being true to our values. But think about the value of a good name. And is that something that we want to pass on to our children? Do we want our children to be saddled with a father or a mother who is basically a shame to the family? And of course, the answer is no. We can destroy our reputation. We can spend our whole lifetime working on our reputation and destroy it in a moment. We need to be vigilant about that. And it comes back again to this idea that we talked about before of self-discipline. We can spend a lot of time on this. I would encourage you to just go to your concordance and go to the word better and see what you find there. There's just a whole lot of things that talk about the relative value of things. And the challenge is not understanding these values. The challenge for each and every one of us is to make the application when we're put in a situation where we have to make that application. That's the challenge that each and every one of us faces. But I want to talk about now, find out if something is better or worse than something else? This is the way that we explain things to children. We explain things to children in terms they understand. You know, if you do this, XXX, whatever XXX is, then I'm going to spank you. And so the child has to make a judgment, spanking or enjoy whatever XXX is over here. I've got to make a decision. I'm going to look at the relative value of those two. And if the child keeps choosing to be spanked, what does the parents have to do? Sometimes you have to up the penalty and make it so that it's not worth the pain of doing whatever it is that you don't want them to do. You know, for teenagers, it's not quite as simple. You may say, you're going to lose your phone for a week, or you can't leave the house for a week. And again, they have to make the same choice that is the punishment worth the reward of doing whatever it is that's forbidden. And again, they have to make a comparison. They have to compare punishment, reward. Which one do I want to do? In our legal system, fines are changed. For example, if it costs $10, a $10 fine to drive 50 miles an hour over the speed limit, probably a lot more people would do that. If the fine was not $1,000, maybe more people would think about it. So again, the penalty versus the reward, and I use that in quotes here. God does the same thing for us. The idea here is reward and punishment. And as we look at these things, God explains things to us in terms that we can understand. And that's the thing, when we talk about punishment and reward in a spiritual sense, we can understand the physical blessings that God gives us. As we look at the Old Testament, we see how God again and again blessed his people. But when we talk about the spiritual consequences of things, then God has to use comparisons for us to understand the full impact of what we're doing. And so I'd like to spend the rest of our time talking about these comparisons. I'd like to ask the question, how bad is hell? And it's not a pleasant subject. I would prefer not to talk about hell, actually. It's not a pleasant subject at all. Where are we with this? Today, people look at hell, it's simply a curse word. And actually, as language has become more coarse, it's not even a strong curse word anymore. And we could talk a lot about that as well. But basically, hell has been regulated or regulated to a, basically being a curse word. And that's the way people think about it. I'm angry, and so I'm going to use this word. Or I'm in a bad situation, and I will describe it with this particular word. But I think that shows a lack of understanding about what this is. What does God have to say about this? What is the Bible description? We're not going to read all the passages I have here. We're going to summarize these. In Matthew chapter 25, verses 41 through 46, Jesus says that it is eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. Well, there's a couple of things about that. It's fire. Okay, so I'm going to be burned in hell, I guess is what Jesus is saying, perhaps. A word that I don't understand, though, is eternal. What is eternity? Can you really grasp that? If you're into mathematics, there's a symbol for it. It looks like an 8 on its side. Infinity. It goes all the way back this way, and it goes all the way back that way. What does it mean? Sort of like when we think about, what is $1 billion? What does that number mean? What is $1 trillion? I understand the number, and I understand 2 trillion is more than 1 trillion, but $1 trillion? I need to put it in terms that I can understand. Eternity. And we've heard descriptions such like, if a bird comes along once every century to the largest mountain in the world and brushes its wings against the mountain, when this mountain is worn down, that's the first day of eternity. Well, okay, that's sort of, I can kind of understand that. But it's eternal. It's something that doesn't go away. And it's not even a place that was made for man. This is made for the devil and his angels. But people are going to go there too. And that's the kind of place we're talking about. The smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night. How do you feel when you're enduring a situation and there is no rest? There's no respite. You just have to put up with it. Well, you can look perhaps to the end of it. Maybe I'll put up for this for whatever period of time it is. But in hell, there is no rest. There is no end to it. And this idea of the smoke of their torment, smoke of the torment, that's quite a word picture. But I don't really understand it. The smoke of their torment goes up again forever and ever. Jude 13 has a different picture. He uses the term the blackness of darkness, or depending on your translation, the gloom of utter darkness. Have you ever been to a cave where they turn the lights out and you can't see anything. I mean, there is literally no light in there. And I've been told by people who run these establishments that people have been lost in these caves. They say if you're lost for more than a few days, your eye, since it's not getting the signal, will lose its ability to see. There's nothing, the brain will just shut it down. To see nothing, to have nothing there. But that raises some other questions. Fire has light, but hell is a place where there is just the blackness of darkness. What does that mean? Well, it's giving us two different pictures. They're talking about the idea of, and again, we need to put these things together. We're not going to have time to do it this morning. The idea, though, that there's going to be like a burn. Ever been burned? How bad was the burn? How did that feel? Well, that's one of the things that we're going to experience there in this place that wasn't even made for us. The blackness of darkness, and again, we'll look at some passages in just a moment. The blackness of darkness means God's not there. There's nothing there. There is no light. Jesus is the light of the world, right? There's no light there in heaven. There's nothing there, only the utter darkness that he speaks of. And notice what he says, and we kind of alluded to it already. It is eternal destruction away from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his might. And perhaps that's the worst part. Most people don't appreciate this, is that we are away from God. And that's why it's black. There is no light. Forever, we will never enjoy the presence of God. As we look at this world, we see evidence of love. We see evidence of the salt of the earth. We are the salt of the earth. We see good things in people. But in hell, there is no good. There is no love. It's all just a bunch of selfish beings looking out for themselves without God in the world. What would the world be like if there was no love, if there was no mercy, if there was none of the things that God commands? What would the world be like? We start to get a picture then, if we imagine that, of what this place might be like. Not a pleasant subject. But notice what Jesus says here, and this is something that perhaps we can identify with. Jesus makes a comparison. How bad? How much should we strive not to enter into hell? Matthew chapter 18, verses 8 and 9, if your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better, here's our word, for you to enter life crippled or lame than with two hands and two feet and be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes and be thrown into the hell of fire. Can you imagine reaching in and ripping your eye out? Jesus says, it's better to do that than to go to hell. Can you imagine cutting your foot off? Just, again, being in the situation, and we've heard illustrations along that line. Jesus says, do it. The point of this is not self-mutilation. The point is, whatever it takes to avoid hell, do it. Whatever you have to give up, whatever you have to do, whatever discipline you need to impose upon yourself, do it. Do it, because you don't want to go there. You do not want to go there. But let's look at heaven now. And I don't want to close on the note of hell. How great will heaven be? Well, we see a description of the city in Revelation chapter 21 and 22. Again, we're not going to have time to read that this morning. It is a city of gold. We have streets are paved with gold. There are, and if you look in the passage, there are stones that we can hardly pronounce listed. All these precious stones there. We have also all suffering vanishes. Death ceases. There is no sadness. There is no crying. There is no pain. Whatever pain you're undergoing in this life, it all goes away. It all goes away. Revelation 21, verses 1 through 7. The redeemed serve God in his temple, and it's a place of worship. We were always singing the praise of the Lamb for what he has done for us. We are sheltered by his presence, experiencing neither hunger nor thirst, protected from harm. The Lamb shepherds us to springs of living water, wipes away every tear. Isn't that a place we want to go? Isn't that a place that we want to have? But even though these pictures are great, you know, is heaven going to have literal streets of gold? Are we really going to see, you know, these precious stones in heaven? That's a physical picture. God's trying to make a picture to us to represent a spiritual value. But there's another comparison that we can, several comparisons we can make about this. Two of them very quickly, and then we'll close our lesson. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 9, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man imagined, what God has prepared for those who love him. You can't imagine how good heaven's going to be. You can't do it. We can talk about gold. We can talk about precious stones. We can talk about all the things that are talked about in the Bible. It's beyond our imagination. And I think perhaps the one that grabs me the most here is what Paul says in Romans chapter 8, verse 18. He says, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth to be compared to the glory which is to reveal to us. Well, what did Paul go through? Well, we're not going to have time to read it this morning. I would encourage you to look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23 through 28. Paul talks about being beaten with rods, being stoned, being shipwrecked, among other things. And he says, on top of all the physical stuff, I have all the anxiety and the care for the churches that he set up. So he suffers physically, he suffers mentally, but he says, it's nothing. We can understand suffering in our lives, all of us. Suffer, have suffered, or are suffering. Paul says it's nothing compared to the glory which is for us. So as we consider life and death, as we consider punishment and reward, let us remember these things. God is giving us these comparisons to help us to understand how much an effort we need to spend avoiding hell and how much effort we need to expend to be sure we make it to heaven. Let's go to God in prayer. Heavenly Father, we're thankful for your word. We're thankful for the provisions that you've made for us in your word. We're thankful, Father, that even though we are sinners and weak creatures, you have sent your son to die on our behalf. And we pray, Father, that we will consider the illustrations that you have provided to help encourage us, Father, to do your will, to please you, so that we can be